All right, Alexander, let's talk about two stories here on, and I think they're both directly connected to the Security Council. And one of them has to do with Canada looking to get a seat on the Security Council. And I think it didn't go through.
No.
And the other one has to do with dealing with the conflict in Libya. And the conflict in Libya is gaining momentum, and it's a conflict that is a proxy war, in essence, between Turkey and Egypt at this moment in time. And while the Turks were making advances east, I would say east towards Egypt, and they were flexing their muscles. A couple of days ago, Egypt struck back, and they gave the Turkish forces, or the forces that Turkey promotes and supports, they gave them a bloody nose. So let's start first with Canada and its desire to get on the Security Council. And then if you could quickly comment on what's going on in Libya.
I think this story about Canada failing to get a seat on the Security Council is extremely indicative. Now, can I just say a few things? The Security Council, the UN Security Council, which is the world's top body, it brings together all the major powers. It has 15 members. Five are permanent and they have veto power. They're the United States, China, Russia, Britain, and France. And the other 10 members are elected and are replaced on a rotating basis. So in order to pass a resolution of the Security Council, some of which, by the way, have the force of international law and are binding, you need the support of 9 members and no veto. So this is from one of the Security Council permanent members. So a seat on the Security Council is a seat on the absolute top table. There are regular elections each year to choose new members, and Canada wanted one. Now, Canada historically has been one of the great forces in international diplomacy. It has been a key builder of the UN system. Way back in the 50s, it was the Canadians, for example, who first negotiated the Suez disengagement, which ended the Suez conflict of 1956. And it was they who first proposed the creation of peacekeeping forces, UN peacekeepers. And the Canadians have been deeply involved throughout the subsequent decades in building up every aspect and element of the UN Security Council, the UN system, the UN General Assembly. They've been active players in international diplomacy. I should say, Alex, you're from a diplomatic family. You can confirm what enormous prestige Canada used to have in international relations and in world diplomacy. And
then came Justin Trudeau.
Exactly. Once upon a time, a UN seat for Canada in elections would have been almost a foregone conclusion. I mean, it had so much goodwill. Justin Trudeau, he's managed in the short time, relatively short time, he's been Prime Minister of Canada, to lose it all. And it's quite astonishing, because what he's managed to do by taking an extreme neoliberal woke position, he's annoyed the present president of the United States, who's Donald Trump, and at the same time, he's quarreled with everyone else. So the Russians don't like him. The Chinese don't like him. They haven't forgotten Huawei and all that. The Chinese don't like him. He's got still got some friends in Europe, but they're a diminishing bunch. And you know, internationally, around the world, he isn't liked at all. And he is dragging Canada and its reputation down with him. And that's why Canada wasn't able to get a seat on the Security Council. It went to Ireland instead. Also a popular country, but one with a much more balanced diplomacy than Canada under Justin Trudeau has. So, yes. So it's, as you correctly said, Alex, along came Justin Trudeau. And if Canadians are listening and watching our program, this is perhaps the best indication you can have to the harm to Canada's international position that its present government is doing.
Yeah, well said, Alexander. And let's get into the situation which warrants Security Council monitoring and perhaps some Security Council decisions. If it was not the Security Council in the first place that destroyed, that gave the green light to destroy Libya.
Absolutely. True? Absolutely. I mean, there was. It was a Security Council resolution 1973, which was passed, as I well remember, in 2011, drawn up, as it turns out, largely by Barack Obama. This is a fact which isn't widely known, but it came out in a British parliamentary inquiry that apparently Obama himself drafted some of the wording for that resolution, a fact that wasn't known. Isn't widely known, but it was he, for example, who inserted into the resolution the fatal words that protect civilians through all possible means. And Obama interpreted that, and the Western powers interpreted that as saying that they could do whatever they liked in Libya in order to destroy Gaddafi's government because they were protecting civilians by doing so. I mean, it's not what the actual resolution says, but those words that were there, which Obama himself drafted and inserted, made that possible. Now, what is the state of Libya now? Libya is in chaos ever since that disastrous intervention back in 2011. It's been in a state of almost continuous civil war. We now have two governments in Libya, one which is the internationally recognized government in Tripoli, which is backed by Turkey, then another government which is backed by Egypt and Saudi Arabia and various other states in the east of the country, led by General Haftar. Now, for a long time, it looked as if General Haftar's forces had the ascendancy, and he seemed to be closing in on Tripoli. Then President Erdogan of Turkey, who has ideological affinities with the government in Tripoli, in the internationally recognized government in Tripoli, which is based around the Muslim Brotherhood. He intervened. He sent his troops into Libya. He sent mercenaries there. He became involved in the fighting that threw back General Haftar's forces, provoking now a reaction from Egypt, which is now countering, sending its own supplies to General Haftar, basically signaling that there are that they have a red line, that the red line is the city of Sirte on the Mediterranean coast. If the Turkish-backed government attacks it, that will provoke an Egyptian response. And what's happened is we've now seen military exercises. The Turkish Navy has been exercising off the coast of Libya, and now Egypt has responded by its own big exercises on its border with Libya. And so we are now looking at a major face-off between these two powerful countries of the Middle East.
Was there any truth, real quick, to the fact that Egypt had an Air Force strike, I believe, on some forces that were backed by Turkey? Is there truth to that?
I do believe it. I think it's very plausible, because what happened was there was an airstrike on a Turkish base, and the air defense system that was created there, which is in Libya, which was Turkish supplied, was destroyed. Now, General Haftar does have a sort of ramshackle air force, but he doesn't have the capabilities to carry out a strike of that level and of that level of sophistication. That almost certainly was done by the Egyptians. They, of course, will not admit that, but I have no doubt that was the case.
Yeah, so they're sending a message.
They're sending a very strong message, and this is something that Erdogan and the Turks need to think about very carefully, because of course Egypt has a border with Libya, Turkey doesn't. Egypt is in a position, possibly, to intercept Turkish supplies to Libya, which is presumably why Erdogan's fleet has been carrying out these naval exercises, but it's difficult to see how that can be sustained against the very powerful Egyptian Air Force. So, you know, things are heating up in Libya, and they're heating up fast. And you're absolutely right. The Security Council, the UN Security Council, needs to intervene to bring this all to a stop, because with this very volatile personality, Erdogan, around, things could easily spiral out of control.
Yeah, they started it. They should intervene to stop it somehow.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, we'll leave it there. You have a mug over there, one of our new badges?
Oh, absolutely. Of course I do. Of course I do. Well, this is
before we sign off.
This is my Greek mug. Of course, Greece is very involved. So, because of course this is also our Libya, Egypt, Turkey, they're all our neighbors. We're all in this neighborhood. We're looking at these events from the Greek perspective with great anxiety and great worry. And these are difficult times for Greece. But this is a Greek mug. It's one of our smaller mugs, 11 ounces instead of 15. You can get, this is the mug with the American flag. And you can see that it's bigger, it's 15 ounces. This is the 11 ounce Greek mug with the Greek flag, better perhaps for what we definitely call Greek coffee in Greece. If you want a double espresso, it's perfect for that too.
All right, very good. All right, guys, take care.